Hi, everyone. Welcome to Transparency Podcast. We're back with our official second episode. We hope that you all enjoyed episodes one and the bonus episode that we released last week. On this episode, we're talking about This Is Us. This is our This Is Us episode. We've been really excited about that.
Very, very.
I mean, I just feel like it gives our listeners a chance to actually get to know us. So I feel like we jumped into the deep end of this podcasting thing and got to some difficult topics. So I'm excited for them to get to know a little bit about why they should even listen to us. We might be crazy people for all they know. So this is our This Is Us episode. It's a part of a three-part series that Ronnie and I are going to do. The first one is going to be all about my beautiful fiance, Rhonda. Hey, Yonce.
Hey.
Episode two will be all about me. And then episode three will be all about how we became us.
Hence, This Is Us title.
So we hope that you all got a chance to listen to Ronnie's sneak peek that she dropped across our social media platforms. It was awesome. Very awesome, babe. I loved it.
Thank you.
So if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, we'll play that for you now.
We'll be right back.
13 years ago, I betrayed myself at the most fundamental level. I denied myself my truth. I became a liar, a cheater, and a deceiver. And not only did I live a lie, I convinced myself that that lie was the truth. You see, this is where denying yourself your truth will bring you every time. I was alone, ashamed, trapped, and broken. Needless to say, I hit rock bottom. And if I had sunk any lower, someone would have had to bury me. You see, 13 years ago, I was a Black gay woman in a heterosexual marriage. In retrospect, I married out of sheer ignorance in an attempt to escape. I was trying to escape myself. Although it didn't take me long to realize that I had made a big mistake. Now, not only was I a mess, I had drugged someone else into my mess. Shortly after, we brought a child into the world, and he innocently and obliviously joined our mess. Truly, at that point, I saw no way out. Besides, I was taught to press my way through and to fight the good fight of faith, which for me meant to fight every instinct in my bones that screamed, "You're gay." Not bi, not suffering from PTSD, not prude, just gay. You see, I had saw my ex-husband as one of the homies. Come to think of it, we were good as friends. One of his nicknames was Dude. We wore the same tennis shoes, the same jeans, the same t-shirts, and the same fitted hats. But we called ourselves a couple. Now, I know all of this sounds obvious now, but then, dressing that way, you would just consider a tomboy, nothing more. I even considered the girlfriends I had in high school as a phase. Talk about denial. You see, being gay in a Seventh-day Adventist home was just not an option. If you're not familiar, let me give you a sneak preview of what growing up Seventh-day meant. We went to church on Saturdays, not Sundays, and almost every weekday, and claimed that we, aside from the rest of the world, knew the real truth and that we were the remnant of God. God is coming back for a church without a spot or a wrinkle, was our favorite scripture to quote, because it spoke to our perfection and our holiness ego. Yeah, I know. What an oxymoron. But it is the truth. We boasted in how we earned God's love by following all of his laws. His love was based on action. We even adhered to some of the Mosaic laws, like the dietary law. So we couldn't partake in eating any pork or certain types of seafood. To this day, I need help in cracking a crab leg. because I was denied it growing up. In my mind, my small, maybe 50-member church was waiting for God to crack the sky and save his remnant. And the rest of the world would burn eternally. As a child, I was conditioned to frown on individuals who went to church on Sundays, who ate crabs, who ate pork, and those who went to the picture show. I was conditioned to believe that I was good and the remainder of the world was bad. The Ten Commandments was our law, and if you offended at one point, you were guilty of them all. That meant that you had to keep all 10. As you can see, there was no room for failure, only perfection. You see, this environment, toppled with my own personal convictions and poor decisions, almost resulted in suicide. I was a unicorn in a world where being different was a death sentence. But I chose to live.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that sneak peek from Ronnie. I was super excited. I watched her write it and practice it, and it was amazing.
Really, babe?
Yeah.
You want to tell everybody my process?
Yeah. Okay. You were just very intentional about it, and I love that.
Well, I'm going to let it slide because it's transparency.
Well, you were putting a piece of you out into the world, so I enjoyed watching that process. Was it a little nerve-wracking for you?
I'm not sure it was nerve-wracking. I think that I'm... perfectionist, so I wanted it to be perfect. So I probably recorded it about 7 times and then picked the one that I like best.
Well, how'd you feel about it? Because I feel like I love listening to you and your stories because they're so different from mine.
Yeah.
So how did you feel like with the outcome?
Oh,
were you proud of it?
Yeah, I was very proud. I think after listening to it for the 20th time, I was just like, wow, this is really great. I mean, thinking about my younger self listening to something like this, say around the age of, 17, 14 and whatnot, I think it would have helped me.
So you think this is something little Ronnie needed to hear?
Yes, I do. And
that's special.
Yeah, it is special. I think that it's definitely something that I go for, something that I want for, the younger generation to come. I often try to be what I needed.
Tell me more about little Ronnie and her life and her religious background that you just touched on.
Well, that's easy. My life consisted of a lot of church and Mo church. And we really weren't allowed to do much outside of church growing up. I grew up in a very strict religious home. I was allowed to play the drums. I dabbled and dabbled in playing a little of the piano. I loved to sing. But when it came to things that were outside of church, it was not really something that was promoted.
So every day of the week, church sort of thing?
Almost. not exactly, but almost, pretty much. But don't get me wrong, we were very devout Christians growing up. It wasn't just something, your parents drug you to church and you sat in the back and played on your iPad type situation.
You wanted to be there.
We wanted to be there. We wanted to participate. We wanted to get closer to God. It was like it was a desire of ours. And it's the one thing that we lived for then.
So what was something that you guys could have done to bring, as children, you feel like closer to God?
Well, we did everything. We did everything that adults did, even down to fasting. I mean, whether it was for 24 hours, 48 hours. But when I say fasting, I mean like no nothing. No food, no water.
No water?
No water.
That nothing. Sounds yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
If you I'm not cheat, sure I would let our kids do no water. That seems... Yeah.
It was a bit extreme. It was a bit extreme. But we did it to see results.
So what were some of the things that you fasted for when you were younger?
It varied. I mean, it could have been a fasting for deliverance, fasting for what we call the Holy Ghost to come and fill us. And we could have been fasting for revival. it all depend on the season.
So, quick intrusive question. As a young, you know, Black queer woman at that time, did you ever try to fast like your gay away?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I will say this. Fasting and praying the gay away didn't come to later, you know, because when I was a child, I didn't really identify as homosexual then, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not like, oh, you know, at that point in time, you're not looking in the mirror like, oh, damn, I'm a homosexual. It was more or less like, oh, I get butterflies when I see her, you know.
But you felt that was wrong. You felt
no, like I honestly just at the time didn't even recognize those feelings. I could not identify them at the time. It's not until I got older that I could identify those feelings.
So who are some people that maybe you did identify with, like in the church, whether it be like Bible characters, or who was it you felt a connection with that made you want to be closer to God?
You know, I imagined that I was like David. He was one of my favorite characters in the Bible, and it talks about how he would pray in his closet. And so I was deep. I would,
you know, praying for multiple closets. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I would empty the shoes out of my closet. That's an insider joke. Empty everything out of my closet and on my face, because it talks about David prayed on his face. Mm. And I took it literal. And it was literal for him, for them. They lay prostrate and they prayed on their face. And I mean, I was doing that since I was a little girl.
Wow. Okay, so let's just back up. What was the denomination that you and your siblings grew up in?
We called ourselves Sabbath Keepers. But the most relative religion that I can probably compare it to is Seventh Day Adventist.
So like going to church on Saturdays.
Yes.
And that's your day of holiness and religion.
That was a day of worship.
And worship. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Sunday was considered to be the first day of the week, and Saturday was considered the seventh day.
Okay.
And so we considered ourselves the remnant, because we figured, hey, we know the real truth out here in these streets.
Oh, so y'all were side-eyeing everybody going to church on Sunday.
Very much so. we called them Sunday keepers. It was a side joke. Like, they don't really know God, you know. We know the real truth. We know, you know, what the Bible says about the seventh day. They're ignorant.
I find it interesting that all denominations feel like they know best.
Oh, like, absolutely.
How many people do they think got it wrong and they're the ones getting it right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last Sabbath church I attended considered themselves non-denominational, but they held to a lot of the traditional ways and practices of Seventh-day Adventists in the same denomination that we came from.
So aside from fasting, what other like practices or exercises did you guys keep up, or like rules, man, and things like that you had?
What rules
up
didn't we have? I mean, that's more the question. I mean, you heard a little bit in a sneak peek about, you know, what they call the picture show and things like that.
The picture show is so old lady.
Well, we had an old lady preacher, you know. Oh. a woman
minister
preacher.
That's yes. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't always fun being a woman preacher, because she was attacked a lot.
Okay.
Just for being a woman preacher. And a lot of the men in our misogynistic men, may I add, in our religion frowned upon women preachers.
But do you feel like, even so, like having a woman preacher, she was still sort of upholding like patriarchal and misogynistic norms in your
Absolutely.
Community?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a lot of ways that I felt she still held to from, you know, that misogynistic, you know, perspective. Mm-hmm. With women. She didn't really like to promote women. She promoted men.
So she wanted to withhold the power and bring men up along with her, but not
exactly.
Women.
There weren't too many females in the ministry that held titles.
So what was there as a young girl in her flock, I would say, what was there for you to aspire to within that church?
Really, the thing that was the goal being in that ministry was always holiness.
Mm.
It was never to pursue titles,
mm-hmm.
To pursue materialistic things. Not even education was a priority. It was holiness and making it to heaven.
So education across the board for anyone was not?
No, it wasn't really a thing that was promoted. Now, I will say we did have a, you know, few in the ministry that did go to college, and I believe we even had a doctor once, and you know, in the ministry and things like that. But it wasn't something that was promoted or, you know, pushed in our ministry.
Especially if it's getting in the way between you and what you should be doing for God and your church.
Especially your time was, you were in church 5, sometimes 6 days a week.
Now, I know that you are a basketball player, or were a basketball player. Mm-hmm. So how did that even figure into this church life?
Well, when we weren't in church, I was on the basketball court.
So I guess I knew where to find little Ronnie.
Yeah. My brothers played a big part in, you know, teaching me, you know, how to play ball. And so that's a hobby that I took up. However, it wasn't something that I was always allowed to pursue outside of street ball, because...
Was it the basketball shorts?
No, actually, no. I was allowed to wear the shorts. What it was the practices were on Saturday.
Oh, that makes sense.
That was our Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And we could not do anything on Sabbath other than rest.
And no coach is going to let you play if you're not practicing.
Exactly. So you can imagine, by the time I got to high school, that was one of my biggest goals there. It was to be a starter and, you know, to be a star. I even wanted to go to college. I did go to college, actually, to play basketball. But I was never able to start because I wasn't able to attend practices on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely, you know, put a wrench in that dream.
So what other things, like, just as a woman, as women growing up in your church, what things were you allowed to or not allowed to do? Or do you feel like were...
Well, I feel over time, mm-hmm. as we got older, some of the rules became a little bit more laxed.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, women couldn't wear pants. Mm-hmm. You couldn't wear makeup. Jewelry was frowned upon. You had to have your hair covered at all times when you were in the sanctuary. We call them mantles or whatever. We would cover our heads. Women could not cut their hairs or shave their head. They would use one scripture in the Bible, man, and build that, you know, that theory on and preach it. And you no longer could do that one thing.
What do you think the goal was there for how they wanted women to appear or how they wanted you to appear? Was it... I feel like a lot of times it's like they don't want you to be distraction or to appear in any way that brings you, that may bring you attention.
I think it was that. But women were basically meant, the way that they preached it and brought it about, was women were meant to serve men.
Mm.
You were to be submissive. You were here to be their handmaid, to be their help.
So that has been one of my main issues with some of the religions that force restrictions upon women, because I'm all for women being able to make their own choices, may that be dressing modestly or not, using makeup to enhance their looks or not, you know, outside of in the place of worship. Were there restrictions on your appearance then, or was it just when you were inside the facility?
Depending on how deep you were, some of our women actually wore mantles outside of the sanctuary.
Okay.
I mean, to work, you know, to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Still do to this day. I, for one, did not prefer the mantles. I wore cornrows, whatever it is, braids, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is I wanted to wear as far as my hair. However, for a long time, I could not wear pants. I did not wear pants.
Mm-hmm.
I would wear jean skirts down to my ankles. It was even frowned upon to wear skirts because you were afraid to show your legs. You know, to show any part of your body was just like, you know, you had to be careful.
How do you feel like that impacted, like, your journey and your appearance now? Like, you're a masculine presenting mm-hmm. woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you feel like that would have, if you had been able to always just explore how you wanted to look and dress, like, how might your journey have been different?
I think that I would have basically found myself a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Self-discovery wasn't a big thing because there was no such thing as self.
in that. You were part of a one whole.
Yeah, you were a part of the whole. Mm-hmm. You know, standing out, being too cute was a bad thing. You know, being too you was a bad thing. It was seen as, you know, boisterous or... You just
keep it humble.
So keep it humble. Mm-hmm. You had to stay humble, yeah. Especially if you were a woman. It was better for you to walk around with your head down and to be unnoticed as much as possible.
So walking around on eggshells, making yourself smaller.
Almost invisible.
Invisible, inferior, mm-hmm. so that you can play this handmade assistant mm-hmm. role to men.
Which is how my inner feminist was born.
So did you feel like you always knew that something was a little off for
Absolutely.
You in that community?
I mean, you know, I used to think it was just the sin in me. But, you know, when I would see men, women alike, you know, talk down on other women, it Ooh, would just infuriate
me. It pissed you
me.
Off, didn't it?
I just couldn't stand I never could stand it. I'd be like, how dare you treat us like we were inferior? Of course, I didn't have the language then. Mm-hmm. that I do now, but inside I was just like, this is not okay. We're not, you know, a piece of trash. We're not dogs. We're not animals.
But you were defending yourself. You're
we
defending
were women.
Yourself as a woman. You're
yeah.
defending the women in your life
exactly.
that are raising you.
Yeah, especially my mom. I will say that that's where I began to really just have a distaste for how people treated women, like they were inferior mm. to men. That was birthed in the church and seeing how a lot of ministers, pastors, leaders treated my mom. Because my mom was one of those very stylish individuals.
Where she is very stylish.
Yeah, she loves her different types of stockings and shoes. And she's more stylish. She was more stylish then than she is now.
To this day, when she tells me that she likes my outfit, I like burst with joy inside. Because if she likes it, it must be amazing.
I mean, my mom was like the queen of style. Then. But that was a bad thing to them. Mm. It was, she had too much individuality for them. Her being called or being referred to as a harlot because she wore fishnet stockings under a long skirt or long dress.
So it was somewhere you couldn't even see it.
Yeah, barely.
Barely. Maybe the bottom ankle.
Yeah, or they would just, like, she would have a skirt, for instance, a dress, down to her ankles, but the split would be up to her, say, up to her knee. They would, you know, basically refer to her as a harlot.
But in the church community, these people are supposed to be your family. Mm-hmm. So if someone's walking around telling you to be inferior, calling you a harlot, making you make yourself smaller and not take part in things that aren't any hurting anyone, but bringing you joy, like how do you build family in that space?
Well, this is the thing. You grow up with these people. Mm-hmm. So the sense of family is just innately there. Mm-hmm. You know, you share sand bowls with these people and popsicles growing up. And it's just one of those things, like it's embedded in mm-hmm. you because you grow up with these people. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them as auntie or cousin or yeah. sister or
and
brother.
And a lot of times, like in church communities, we're leaning on one another, living with each other.
That's facts.
Helping each other pay
That's
bills,
facts.
Providing childcare.
The truth of the matter is people... To this day, you often see me call them on social media brother, sister, mm-hmm. Or family. Because mm-hmm. when I say we grew up together, I don't mean that just in the sense of we went to church together and we saw each other every day. I mean, we lived with each other. Mm-hmm. For one, my mom had 6 kids. Mm-hmm. You had another family, like the Tate family, like the Macklin family. You'd have all these different families who had 7 kids, 11 kids. And we all would fall, when we were falling hard times, we leaned on each other. Our parents mm-hmm. and we lived with each other. Some of the kids and people that I refer to, they babysat me when I was, you know, younger. And so we were family. It's just, it was a lot of dysfunction going on.
Do you feel like the church and the family structure kind of created a playground for abuse? And
absolutely. The abuse was so embedded in the culture that it was gone undetected. Mm-hmm. It was not something that people really pointed out because it was something that basically you should have been used to. And the scripture they always used was God chastised those he loved.
And that's what they would use to condone verbal abuse, mm-hmm. you know, psychological abuse,
emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm. They would clothe it as, I'm going to whip you and it's going to hurt. You're not going to like it, but it's good for you.
Yeah, I'm doing it because I love you. I want the best for you.
Exactly. And because it was disguised as love, mm-hmm. people did not see it as abuse, you know.
So what did that look like specific to you? Because I want to keep this on you and your journey. What did that abuse look like? Can you give me an example of what that looked like for you and your siblings and your family?
I would say the biggest thing that I've seen, specifically for me, was the telling of secrets and confessions. That was one of the biggest transgressions in my eyes. When you go to a pastor, a leader, a preacher, and you confess some of your deepest, darkest, you know, issues and, you know, struggles.
And you're looking for forgiveness and absolution.
Yeah. You're looking for comfort and strength. Mm-hmm. And they turn around and use it and weaponize those things. It's something that I still don't have words for to this day.
It's a betrayal.
It is. It's a betrayal of trust. You know, in a lot of ways, it's abuse on a psychological level, mm-hmm. on an emotional level.
Because how do you ever share again? How do you ever let somebody in? How do you create a boundary mm-hmm. now that's not toxic?
And now when I no longer trust you, how can you help me in my deliverance? You know? How can you be a guide for me when I can't trust you when you extend your hand?
And that's supposed to be your role. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. You just said something there, babe.
Yeah.
That was good. So tell me, like, I know that I have some background history on, like, how the church has treated you and your siblings at a young age because of your familiar structure. You come from... Your parents were married, mm-hmm. and then they got divorced.
Right.
And then how did that play into your church? Like, I know lots of churches, like, divorce is not even a thing. So mm-hmm. how did absolutely. That... Oh,
absolutely. I mean, you have to keep in mind, our church was very old-fashioned in every sense of the word. Of course, divorce was one of those things. It was, like, taboo. You know, you didn't even talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, people didn't get divorced. You know what I mean? Infidelity in that environment just did not happen. And if it did happen, it may be swept under the rug or, you know.
It's not grounds for divorce.
Yeah, still. Yeah. You didn't get divorced. It doesn't matter. Come hell or high water, you know, you stayed together. Mm-hmm. You raised those kids. You did what you had to do. My parents, however, went through some things and got divorced. And my mom ended up leaving the ministry at a young age. And so it played a huge role in some of the ways that the church targeted my family and my siblings.
Targeted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it's almost like they had to basically teach us this is not the way.
Don't be your parent.
So they had to double down on what was wrong mm-hmm. and what was right. And in a sense, they may didn't do it on purpose, but it was like they were trying to turn us against the parent that left, who wasn't there.
So in a way, like, your mom had to face some shame from the church, and then they're teaching you not to be like your mom. And that's exactly. shame the opposite way too, because as a mom, all you want is for your kids to be proud of you and for your kids to look up to you and feel like you are a success. And then for them to be even, like, you do want them to be better than you, but not because they're disappointed in you.
Yeah, that word shame is just, I can't even tell you. They really played on that, you know, because they just didn't want us. In a sense, it's like, okay, this went wrong, but I'm telling you what I'm going to do. I'm going to raise you guys to be this way, and you're going to be the complete opposite of her. And in a lot of ways, it was too much. It was too much. And my dad is just this docile personality.
Yes, he is.
Where he's not going to, you know, stand against. And then also, like I said, when you fell on hard times, my dad now was a single father mm-hmm. of three. Needless to say, he didn't have the bandwidth to care for three little girls. Mm-hmm. And so he had to lean on our church family harder than ever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a lot of ways, you're not going to speak against your own family.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even if even if he felt at moments or times that it was wrong, I think that it was a matter of, you know, survival of the fittest. I need to stick with the people who stuck with me.
Right. And so your dad ended up getting remarried, and I would think that that would bring now another like matriarchal figure into your life. How do you feel like, okay, do you feel like it kind of changed how the church treated you after your dad got remarried? Do you feel like it corrected things?
No, it just kind of perpetuated into, you know, she now took on this whole shame narrative and brought it into the home.
Wow, so now the church is all the way inside the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was someone he met at church?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. He married through the church, and she was a missionary. And it was just basically like, in a way, I would teach and beat your mom out of you when it came to our siblings.
Because I'm not her.
I'm not your mother, you know. And so we were definitely treated like stepkids.
So she had her own kids?
Oh, yeah. She has her own kids. And they were pretty much a lot older and self-sufficient at the time, but we were a lot younger. Mm-hmm. So I guess she looked at us as a way, you know, as she looked at us like kind of like an assignment. Mm.
She was going to fix you. She was a fixer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Something to fix. And so in a lot of ways, you know, like I said, that church way, you know, was brought right into the home. My siblings got it a lot worse than me.
Why do you think
I will
that
say
is?
That. I don't know why I was favored. They often say that I was their godchild. I don't know how true that is. But for some reason, I didn't get it as bad as they did.
So where did you find safety? Where felt safest
prayer
to you?
I was a cold-hearted, get down on your knees, on your face, straight prayer.
You still pray?
I do.
Yeah.
I love to pray. I love to communicate with God, and because I know God's presence, and I can identify with that at a young age, such a young age, I know when God is around. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that saved me. Like I told you before, one of my favorite characters was David. And anytime anything would go wrong with David, he would go in his closet and he would lay prostrate before mm-hmm. God. Even whether his child died or whatever it may have been, that's where he went, straight prostrate. And for me, it's where I felt the most loved, in the presence of God. So prayer was my go-to.
So if you felt the safest and, like I said, the most safe in the presence of God and during prayer, how does it feel to be in a community that's demonizing you as a queer woman? Like, how do you make that space safe? Like, what did you have to do?
Oof. Oh, man, you're talking about a little bit about everything right now. That cognitive dissonance there.
Like someone's telling you mm-hmm. young black queer woman, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. This space is not, you're supposed to be doing, you're supposed to be interested in men and how you can serve the men in this community and romantically and sexually and building families with mm-hmm. men. And now you have grown into this black queer engaged woman.
I'm not even sure how to even go into that conversation because it was such a long journey for me.
Yeah.
Because initially I wasn't so into sexuality. Mm-hmm. I was a child.
Yeah.
So God's love was God's love.
Right.
You know, they taught me, of course, a lot of restrictions, a lot of rules, traditions, things that I had to follow. And I was okay with that. I was a child, like mm-hmm. I said. However, when I came to get to know myself, like even when I, as a youngster, to reflect back on that, but in retrospect, I even played house with little girls. Mm-hmm. I didn't like to play house with little boys. As far back as I could remember,
when I would get butterflies, my first crush was a little girl mm-hmm. in my elementary school class, not a little boy. But you didn't notice these things as children. Yeah, it just happens. It's easier
to look back on now yeah. and be like, oh, that's what that was.
Yeah. Of course, now I can look back on it and have language for it. But then it just was.
So as you came into, like, everyone goes on their own, like, sexuality, self-discovery mm-hmm. mission. Do you feel like your home made you dislike parts of yourself?
I would go even deeper for you. My home church made me hate major parts of me.
Like, what parts did you not
the
like?
Queer part of me was something I hated. And it originated from the belief that God hated all homosexuals. You know, I was taught that homosexuality was an abomination. So, and that God hated homosexuals. And that's what that meant.
So then if God hated homosexuals, God hated you.
Yes. So how could he love me? Mm-hmm. I was a homosexual. And no matter how much I prayed, fasted, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. No matter how much I tried to pray it away, fast it away, tarry it away. We didn't talk about that.
What? Tarrying.
Oh, my Lord. So y'all, some of my listeners, y'all know what tarrying. So tarrying actually means to wait.
Okay.
But we had the wrong interpretation of it. Growing up, tarrying to us means to go on the altar. You got on your knees or you stood up, however you were comfortable, and you would just say Jesus, 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 Jesus all over and over again till you would purge.
And purging the...
And the physical aspect of it, purging is like a whole bunch of white stuff coming out your mouth.
Ew.
Yes. And you would have like napkins, paper towels.
And this was the goal.
Yes, the goal was to purge. And partially. And the other goal was to be filled with the Holy Ghost.
Okay.
So you called on Jesus. And that was tarrying.
So Jesus, 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 Jesus.
Yeah, and it didn't
Jesus,
sound
Jesus.
Like that in a whole bunch of a room full of people. and where that originated from is on the day of Pentecost. We were taught about how they went into the upper room and they tarried, which means they waited. That's what they were told to do. But there's a lot to that story, but that's where it originated from. And so we took that as to say, you go to the altar and you tarry there and wait for the Holy Ghost to fill you. And you would speak in tongues as the Holy Spirit would give you utterance.
So earlier you mentioned that you were proud to go to church, that mm-hmm. you prayed, that you did all these things without having to be asked or made to do those things. So in one way, you're checking all of these boxes for being a good Christian growing woman, devout. But you're devout, but you're gay. So what does it mean during that time if you were checking all the boxes but that one? Does it make a difference? You got to check them all. Does it got to be 100% or is like 90% good?
You
or?
Had to. You couldn't. I said this a little bit in my sneak. I touched on it a little bit. But we would recite. We had this saying. And I can't go into it because I can't remember all of it. So I don't want to, you know, go into that part. But we would recite this saying. And not only that, we would also talk about how sing this song, we would talk about or recite the Lord's Prayer. And then we would say the Ten Commandments. But at the end, we talked about how if you offended them at one point, you were guilty of them all. There was no wiggle room there. If you offended them at one point, you were guilty of it all.
And I just want to be clear. If I'm someone and I'm doing 100% of the things, I'm going to be extremely upset at the person that's allowed to do 90% of the things and getting, you know, raised up in the church and being applauded, that's mm. going to make me look at you sideways because why am I doing 100% but you get to live your life and be free? That's going to be frustrating for me to watch someone else on their journey.
We used to sing a song, Lord, I'm running, trying to make 100, 99 and a half won't do. There was no 99 and a half. Mm. You had to be at 100.
So then you're aspiring to...
Be perfect.
Be perfect.
Perfection was the goal.
I feel like a lot of Christians are recovering perfectionists.
You're saying something there.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about this in your sneak peek. You talk about the holiness ego.
Oh, man.
And the ego that comes
with it. It was such a big thing.
Explain it to me.
Let me tell you something. You know, so I can only touch on certain, you know, we have a limited amount of time and it's so much to cover. But the practices that I mentioned here weren't even all of what was included. I mean, we're talking about Pentecost, where we talk about Lord's Supper. We would wash each other's feet. It was so many different things that we participated in. And like I said, there was no halfway mark. You had to get it right. But the holiness ego, to touch on that a little bit, if you had a good week, you came to church and you was on fire. I mean, when you didn't make no mistakes, I'm talking about as a child, that meant you didn't talk back to your parents. Mm-hmm. You know, you did what you were told. You went on all your fasts that you were supposed to go on. You know what I mean? You made good grades. You didn't wear pants that week or whatever it may have been. Mm-hmm. You covered your head when you came into the sanctuary. You did everything that was required of you.
Right.
No one had to chastise you or abuse you.
And when you do that, you're like on top of the world.
You was on the world. So you was on top of the world. So when you would come to church, nobody could tell you nothing. You would come to church and you would shout all over the church. You acted like the Lord came down, swept you up in a cloud, and then dropped you right on your head. You was acting crazy. And not only that, you would find that people who did good for a while would start to become very judgmental of others who yes. did wrong. Mm-hmm. It was a holiness ego. Oh, really? That person? Oh, these Sunday people. I'm telling you, they, you know, we talk so bad about Sunday people.
Don't do that. I was a Sunday that person.
Let me tell you something. We talk so bad about Sunday. I mean, people who thought they knew God and didn't really know God.
But obviously, no one is perfect.
Apparently.
So how did you navigate imperfection, or did that teach you to navigate imperfection?
I'll tell you what, it taught me. It taught me how to get a good game face and keep it. It taught me a good facade because I had to learn how to look perfect even when I wasn't. And that was the downfall of me, because it came to a point in my life where when my life was falling to pieces, no one around me could detect it.
Nobody knew that anything was wrong.
Nobody knew.
Even the people nearest and dearest and closest to you.
I'm talking about when I was rock bottom low, when I was ready to end it all and leave this place, no one knew.
So you saw no value in you being alive, and no one around you was able to tell that?
No. And I mean to the point where I was having breakdowns. I had emotional and mental breakdowns where I would spaz out. I would hit things and I would just sink in tears. No one knew my fits. The only person who knew was the one who was there, and that was my ex. Mm-hmm. You know, but other than that, if you weren't there to witness, you had no idea. My facade game was strong, but that's what being in that environment taught me.
So how have you seen religion and your practices then and now just impact what you want your methods to be raising our kids and just child rearing in general? What does it make you want to elevate in them or minimize in their experience? Like, what is it? How does it impact it?
Well, one thing that I always pride myself on, and that is giving them the room and space to discover who they are. One lesson that I learned being in this relationship was that they are not mere extensions of me.
No, they're their own people.
They're their own person.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to back off and allow them to be just that.
But you weren't given that space. So that's a lot of unlearning and unpacking.
Man, unlearning? Shh, you said a mouthful right there. Because I learned in my journey that unlearning is just as powerful, just as needed as learning.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think some of our listeners are going to be interested to know, how do we address religion in our home with the various backgrounds that we have? And
I think we address religion with the spirits that we have and, you know, we embody, and that is free spirited.
Mm-hmm.
We allow each other to be who we are authentically without any judgment,
mm-hmm.
Without any type of, I want to control that.
Yeah.
You want to control me. No, none of that. I'm allowed to be free in my religious practices, whether that means pray. I think you made a comment. It was kind of funny to me because I said, you know, I think it was about 2 months ago. And I said, baby, you know, I pray all the time. And you said, that's funny because I never see you pray.
Like, I know that you pray.
Right.
But I guess in the way that I was brought up, and even in the way that you were brought up, it didn't.
Yeah.
It looked differently.
You had to be on your knees, yeah, with your hands in front of you. In prayer position,
mm-hmm,
and that's the way you pray. Well, now, this is what I walk with God, and I mean that in a literal sense.
Mm-hmm.
I could be watering my grass, which I do often. It's weird, but I could be watering my grass and I'm talking to God.
Mm-hmm.
I could be cutting my grass and I'm talking to God. I could be in the bed where you think I'm looking at TV, and my mind is. I think it's something I do often too. I blank out into space, and I'm praying.
I know, because I'd be asking you questions and you don't be responding. And me and my homegirl don't like that.
And I often do that in the shower. Mm-hmm. I do that everywhere I go. I could be cooking and I'm praying. I'm praying about my kids, or I'm praying over my kids, or I'm praying about my kids or us, our relationship.
I think something that, like, and I'm not, you know that I'm not very religious, but I am very spiritual, and I definitely believe in the power of ourselves and our power as families and as communities. And I always want to make sure that our kids are in places that are serving them and not harming them or forcing them to make themselves smaller, because I'm never going to do that to them in this home. So for me, when I hear you talk about how your journey took a lot longer to just to know yourself because you weren't given the space to do that, I'm like, wow. I don't want that for our children. I don't want them to be kind of lost along the way or feeling like they don't have the opportunity to explore, yeah, because in this home they do.
I think at the core, we broke it down to our kids are not, once we came to terms with the fact that they're not extensions of us, they are their own person. The biggest part for me is to establish and create an environment where they are able to discover themselves.
Yeah. I mean, even when people are like, oh, you know, both of you gay, you're going to raise kids that are gay, even though the logic makes zero sense.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not raising my kids to be anything but what they are. So if they are gay or queer or, mm-hmm, lesbian or whatever, mm-hmm, it's not because I made them that way. It's because, yeah, I gave them the space to be just that.
The
logic
doesn't make sense off the, you know, the premise is that if you have two gay parents, you'd be gay. But the fact of the matter is, I had two heterosexual parents,
mm-hmm,
and I'm gay. So where how does that make sense? It just doesn't, you know. So I mean, you know, we're not even going to address all of the homophobic theories out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad that I was able to, and we didn't even get a chance to even delve into it. But it's too deep to even uncover, I think, in one. You know,
what part?
The whole walking through the self-discovery mode, how I got here.
Yeah.
From there, I think we talked about the beginning. We talked about where I am now, but we didn't talk about much of the middle part.
Well, I think self-discovery is something that we're always doing,
mm-hmm,
and continuing to do. So I definitely think that that's something that we're going to have to expand on, and you know, we have transparency now, so you have all the space to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you, babe. I appreciate you for showing up and just being engaged in this conversation. I know sometimes coming from the church, like certain denominations, you're like not supposed to speak on these things or speak and not even that you spoke of it in ill will, but
yeah,
just outwardly, yeah, putting out there that this isn't really how you would have done things.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there, and that's the thing. That's how you can detect whether or not there's healing.
because the purpose of this was not to bash that community in any sense, you know, but for me, it was to be transparent about my past, what I saw as dysfunctional and what is, you know, dysfunctional, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, because there are so many things that I can tell you that I learned from that environment growing up that way, self-discipline being one of them. There were a lot of things that I could take away from, you know, being raised in that environment. And, you know, I was taught respect for my elders, and there was so many things that I can take away from it, but it wasn't all bad. It was not all bad.
Well, I definitely appreciate your journey to healing from some of the abuse that you touched on. I more than applaud all of the positive things that you were able to pull out of that because...
Oh, and let me say this before you end that part. One of the major positive factors that I can pull from being raised in an environment was my introduction to God.
Yeah.
That is at the core of my being. I love God. And I don't know that I would be here today without my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know.
And for a lot of us, whether that be just being taught how to tap into our relationships with God, the universe, whoever mm-hmm. you see, your creator, or maybe
yeah.
you believe in things outside of that. Mm-hmm. Once you impact what that is for you, I mean, discover what that relationship looks like for you spiritually.
Yeah.
You're just so much more powerful.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that is a good place to stop episode 2.
Yeah, it was good. This was good.
This was really good.
I feel like I'm at the Red Talk table or something right now.
So I wanted to take a second in this episode and thank our first sponsors.
Hey.
A Black queer woman-owned apothecary named Holland Spices and More. They reached out to us and were just... They left us some reviews about our podcast and just our relationship and our journey, and they have become like family to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've sent us a wellness box that I was really excited about and have already started using and seeing results in. So we got an eczema bar for Nova. We got some teas for your stomach, absolutely. Teas for my headaches. We got all types of stuff. So I just really want to shout out again Holland Spices and More. They're on Instagram, and that's also www.hollandspicesandmore.com.
Yeah, you'll be able to see more information.
Yeah, we'll post more information on our Instagram, so follow us there at Transparency Podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening.
Big Mama out.